Hello, welcome to this episode of the Parental Tools Podcast. On today's episode, Jordan, we are joined by Mr. P.
Mr. P, ICT, also known as Lee Parkinson. Mr. P is a teacher, he's a podcaster, he's an author, he does teacher training, he's a technology enthusiast.
Oh, mate, it keeps going.
And he's a dad to four children, three triplets and an older stepson as well, so he's busy.
Very busy man. And this was I really enjoyed talking to Mr. P.
Yeah.
I learned, like you said, he's a teacher. I learned something.
Yeah, very passionate about his profession, very passionate about parents, you know, with their kids going through school as well. Really interesting conversation.
Before we jump in, today's episode is sponsored by The Book Bus.
The Book Bus is a mobile library with over 300 books on board for children of all ages. If you are a school or a nursery, you can book a visit from The Book Bus completely free and your school will earn free books as well. Head over to thebookbus.co.uk for more information.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, welcome to the podcast, Mr. P. So good to have you on.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Amazing. Just for our listeners that don't know who you are, could you give us a little bit? Who are you? What do you do? All of that sort of stuff.
Yeah, so my name is Lee. I'm otherwise known as Mr. P. I am a primary school teacher from Manchester. I've been a primary school teacher for 16 years. I still work part-time in my school, but also have my own training business where I travel here, there and everywhere around the country doing sort of training sessions for teachers. Usually focusing around making more out of technology in the classroom to support learning, help teachers in lots of different ways. And from sharing sort of tips and resources online and sharing sort of funny videos about life as a teacher, sort of grown quite a decent sort of following. Host a podcast with my brother, written a couple of books. So yeah, keep myself busy.
Man said just casually just written a few books on top of all of that as well.
Well, the books, I mean, the funny thing about the books is they all came out of the pandemic. So the first book we wrote was mainly because I couldn't do my training. So I was sort of stuck at home. And once we'd done all the home learning with the kids, or when I couldn't hack it anymore and I had to get away. I went and sort of wrote the book. And then the second book was when I actually got COVID. So I got COVID between like Christmas and New Year in 2021, I think it was. And so we literally just couldn't do anything, couldn't go anywhere, see anyone. So again, just started writing. And then, so this third one that we've got coming out, that's the one that's been the most challenging because we've had to try and fit in writing it with everything else going on. So, yeah.
Oh, amazing.
So you've got a couple of things on the go then.
I like to keep myself busy.
From the sounds of it. And on top of that, 4 kids, is that right?
Yeah, so I've got a 20-year-old stepson who, to be fair, at this age now, he just keeps himself to himself. We don't really hear it. He sort of treats the house a bit more like a hotel. He sort of comes in from work, asks what's for tea, and then that's all we sort of see of him. So, and he's at a stage now where every weekend he's just going to another 21st. He's at that age. So, so I've got him, and then I've got 12-year-old triplets. So I've got two identical boys and a girl. Yeah. So they turn 13 next week. So we're about to enter the teenage years, and I'm absolutely dreading it.
Really?
Yeah. Cause I've come to realize that, I mean, how old are your kids then?
Mine are 2 and 4.
My daughter's 3, so
So you're probably at, or you've probably maybe been through the stages where you're like wishing the time away because it's so full on, you know, like, and I think not in a bad way, but you know, it's hard, isn't it? It's when the kids are younger and it's really tough and it's hard, and you find yourself sort of wishing, like when we were the triplets, I always get asked, like, how did you survive? How did you do it? How did you, you know, get, and the God's honest truth is the first year, I can't tell you what it was like. Like, it's a complete blur. Like, it was just, we've just muddled our way through it. Like, the only advice I can ever give people is, like, routine is really important. So we had the kids in a routine where pretty much every night, 6 o'clock, it was like bath, bottle, bed, every night of the week, all the time. And we were very lucky that we had family around us. So if one of us weren't able to be there, we could get grandparents to come and do it. And to be fair, from about 6-7 months, we had him sleeping through, and that was an absolute godsend. But it was sort of like, right, we just need to get him sleeping through, and then things will get easier. And then it was like, right, we just got to get him out of nappies, and then things will be easier. And then before long, they're sort of about to become 13, where they just sort of don't really, they're just on the cusp of not wanting to spend every minute with you. Do you know what I mean? Like, they've got their own friends now, that they've discovered video games, and there are other things that, and I think you don't necessarily appreciate that time you have. Because I was talking about the other day, so we got a dog during a lockdown, and I was quite reluctant to get in a dog because I made it clear, like, I don't want to be picking up the dog's poo. Like, I'll have a dog, but I'm not picking up. And the kids promised me, they're like, no, I'll do it. And that lasted about a week. But I love that dog more than anything now, because when I get home from traveling, if I've been in a school and I drive home, it used to be a few years back that I'd get home and then the kids would run to the door and sort of greet me. Be like, dad, dad. Whereas now the dog's the only person in the house that's happy to see me when I get home from work. And the best to get out of the kids is sort of like, oh, you're right. Yeah, you're right, dad. That's the sort of thing. So, yeah, it's... But yeah, so we've got those. So they were they're a blessing. I absolutely love them. They're the best thing that's ever happened to me. The kids, they are amazing.
And so they're 12. So did they start secondary school this year or last year?
So it was last year. So they're year 8 now. So they're second year. You know, they've got to the point now where I think the novelty's well and truly worn off. So they're at the point where it's like, I hate school. You know. The one I keep getting from them is, when are you going to strike again, Dad, so we can have some leave? That's the one I keep getting. So I've never known my kids to be that interested in my job as a teacher, purely because they think they can get a day off if we go striking again.
I remember in year 8, there was some teacher strikes when I was year 8.
Yeah.
And our school didn't strike. So the kids went on strike because the teachers didn't strike.
Yeah.
We were like, everyone else is getting a day off.
I know. It's the same, like my school, I was the only one at my school that was strike, because it's not, you're not in the same union. So most of our teachers are in a different union that didn't strike. But yeah, the kids got the days off, so they were absolutely buzzing.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, amazing. I have to say, I love your podcast, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Like, I'm not a teacher, but I just find it so incredible. What made you get into teaching?
Well, it's a funny story, actually, because I'm not one of these people who are like, I've always dreamed of doing it from when I was at school. I wanted to grow up and be a teacher. Initially, what I wanted to be when I was younger was, I wanted to be an actor, to be honest. But I sort of went off it a little bit acting when the peer pressure of being a teenager came in. So, you know, when you're like, you're with your mates and they just take the mick out of you all the time. So my thing was, they used to take the mick out of me for doing acting, and I'd go off for auditions and this sort of thing. And I sort of gave in to that peer pressure. So I left school and I just didn't have a clue what to do. And my girlfriend at the time, she just applied to do teaching. And so she just sort of said, why don't you do it? And I was like, all right, yeah, okay. And that was it. So the way I got into teaching was purely because my girlfriend at school did it, and that was it. So it wasn't this sort of inspiring, I wanted to make a difference, that it was just sort of like, oh well, yeah, this sounds all right, this sounds, you know, fairly straightforward. And yeah, 16 years later, I'm just about hanging on, still doing it part-time.
You could definitely get on Waterloo Road now.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was that sort. Those were the sort of auditions I was going for. Like, I always remember I got down to last. It was like a callback for a heart part in Hollyoaks when I was about 15, 16. But it meant that I missed like the biggest rugby sevens tournament at school to go to this callback. And the amount of like grief I got off the team, the lads. That was like one of the last auditions I went to, because I was like, oh, I'm not getting this stick again if I, you know. And I look back now and I really regret it, because I think I should have stuck with it, really. And you weren't being nasty with it, but they probably just, you know, lads being lads, I suppose.
Yeah. Wow. And here you are 16 years down the line as a teacher's teacher, training teachers quite often. So when the strikes did kick off last year, you were on like Good Morning Britain, Lorraine, kind of
voice of
reason almost. How did that all that come about?
I think it's just from the social media stuff. So, I mean, being in the job, it's one of those jobs where, unless you're, because everyone has an opinion on teaching, you know, because we all went to school. So we all think we know what it's sort of like, and we think, oh, it can't be that hard because, you know, our teachers didn't seem that stressed. So it's one of them where, unless you're actually in the job, I don't think you fully appreciate the scope of it and the toxicity of certain aspects of teaching. And I've just found myself in a position where I seem to be this person that speaks for teachers and sort of reveals the realities of it. And I'm quite lucky in the respect that my sort of head teacher isn't on social media, and therefore doesn't, not that I say anything about him, but you know, people often say, like, how do you get away with saying what you're saying about Ofsted or the government and that sort of thing? And I'm like, well, I'm not saying anything that most people aren't thinking, you know? And so I've just been sharing, you know, the sort of realities and sort of speaking out about all the downsides and negative aspects of education, not from any other perspective of just being a really passionate teacher who wants to, you know, make education the best it can be for teachers and students. And it seems to resonate. And so obviously when the strikes came about, I was making videos about it, chatting about it. And yeah, next thing I was getting invited to be interviewed and that sort of thing. And it seemed to go down really, really well. So I've done a couple of things on the telly, which has been nice. It's been good, really.
Yeah, amazing. And you've come across really well on them as well. I'm not just saying that. My wife's a teacher, so that's how I'd know of you, really. A few years ago, she was like, you've got to see this guy and you've got to listen to his podcast. So kind of followed you for the last few years, not as a teacher myself.
Yeah.
And there's that kind of, not pride, because obviously I don't know you personally, but like, oh, it's amazing to see that you've gone from teaching in the class, posting funny videos, lip sync videos on TikTok with your daughter, to like being the voice of reason almost when it comes to all the stuff kicking off. You've done so well with it.
Oh, thank you very much. No, and thank you, wife, for all the support. No, it's that, and yeah, it's that's all it's trying to do, is just sort of help and support people. And you know, I've been interviewed by a couple of podcasts before, and I remember one that was asking all about like the followers and the, you know, and how many followers you get, and I was like, I'm not really bothered about that. Like, for me, it's what value can I add with what I do. So if I can post a video that, you know, there's a teacher there who's had a really crap day, the kids have been a nightmare, they've had, you know, parent complaint, this, whatever it might be, and they've come home from work and they're just absolutely fried, and they sit down, they have a little scroll through social media, and they can watch one of my videos and sort of go, all right, so I'm not the only one, or, oh, actually, yeah, that happens to me as well, and they can sort of resonate with it. I think it's a special thing, really. So, you know, as much as social media, there's a lot of negatives around it, and there's a lot of downsides to it, and as much as someone like yourself will give me that support, there's always someone else who wants to sort of bring you down and don't think you deserve to have the reach and the platform. I just think I try and focus on those positives, and hope to think that the content sort of makes a bit of a difference and helps people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. This is a bit of a random one. I've always wondered, what is a teacher like as a parent? Like, are you harder on your kids, like with their homework, or like if they get sent home, or are you like straight at school? Like, how does that like dynamic play out?
So I did a little bit in the last tour about this. We did a little part about how different I am as a teacher to a parent, and how once you become a parent, it just gives you a completely different perspective on teaching, really. Not to say that I'm necessarily a better teacher because I'm a parent. In fact, probably the opposite. But just certain things, it just changes perspective on things. So you mentioned homework there. I hate homework. I can't stand it.
Extra work for you at home.
Well, it is. But before being a parent, homework was the most important thing. Like, there was no excuse for why children couldn't do the homework, and it was an absolute must. And if you don't do it, you'll be staying at work. Whereas now, as a parent, I can't stand it. I hate it, especially at primary school. Like, I really think at primary school, I mean, research has shown it doesn't really add much to let secondary school is completely different. And obviously the kids now, they're having to do homework, and, you know, it is a chore and they hate it, but you've just got to get on with it. But I think at primary, I don't actually see how much value it adds. I think the most important thing you can do as a parent with your kids at primary is help them learn the times tables. I think that's a massive thing. And then obviously read with them and really value reading. So if you can do those two things, anything else, any other homework that gets set, it's not, you know, you can do it if you want, but I don't think it's worth falling out or ruining your weekends about. And, you know, there's so many other things that you can be doing that can add value. You know, when your time's so precious, the time you have with your kids,
yeah,
because of the busy work world we live in now, where work and school, and it consumes so much time, the time we have is so precious and valuable. There's loads of other things you can be doing that can be adding value beyond like doing another worksheet from Twinkle, you know.
Are you saying that because you always had three lots to sit through? Is that why?
Well, yeah, there is that. But I mean, yeah,
photocopy it.
Yeah. And there's nothing worse than when you have that argument with your kids where you're like, right, do the homework, and they like storm off, so you do the homework, then it comes back with really poor feedback, like, it's not very good, it needs to improve, and you're like, I did it. I mean, like, with my kids, we do so much sport with them. Like, I was talking the other day on my training, because I talk a lot about like well-being for teachers, and, you know, I take a very frank approach with this whole well-being culture within teaching, but I'm sure it's the same in a lot of other jobs where, you know, schools think well-being can be sorted now with some tick box gestures, and, you know, they'll do sort of yoga, or they'll put like a mug on your desk and let you wear jeans to school and stuff. And it's like really patronizing, because I think the best way in which you can improve a teacher's well-being is to give them time and to like trust them to do the job. And I sort of say on my training, like, I can't patronize people by saying, you know, this is what's great for my well-being, because what's good for my well-being is completely different to what's good for your, you know. So the thing that brings me the most amount of joy in my life at the minute is my weekends are just spent shipping the kids here, there and everywhere doing sport. So like, Callum plays football as well, but the triplets, like rugby, football, athletics, anything that they're doing. And I think it's the most important thing you can do as a parent is get your kids into sport. Like, I think the life lessons they get from being part of a team and playing sport as they grow up just sets them up for life. I think they get so much more out of that than the majority of the curriculum they learn at school. But I can't turn around to anyone else and be like, that's my opinion. That's what but I can't turn around and say, are you struggling with your well-being? Well, go and watch some kids play sport. You know, you might not have kids. And if you start doing that, probably going to get in trouble, aren't you? So, you know, but yeah, so with the kid, with homework, you know, in primary, a lot of my view was, right, well, if they're going training and if they're doing some exercise, that's probably going to have more of an impact than the homework. So yeah, so sport plays a big part in for me as a parent. I absolutely love it.
I love that. Go watch some kids play sport. Get yourself a people carrier and go and watch a local five-a-side.
Yeah, and if you are going to do that, get a heated gilet, because that is the best invention of modern.
What?
Yeah.
I've not even, what?
No.
So my wife got me one for Christmas, and it's an absolute game changer. So obviously with the weather we've had and seem to continue to have, I've got this like gilet that has a little battery pack.
No way.
And it keeps you warm. It's unbelievable. So like on the sidelines when all the other parents are like shivering and moaning about how cold it is, you want to see the smug look on my face. I'm nice, warm and toasty.
That, I might have to, you know, that's my Saturdays now.
Yeah.
My boy plays football. He started school in September, so he joined a team.
Yeah.
With a few of his friends from school. We're now in that stage where our Saturdays just become around the activities, like what you were saying before.
Yeah.
Got a nice little tradition of going for a Greg sausage roll on the way home from football.
Nice. Yeah.
And I love it. There was one week where he was ill and he couldn't go, and I was a bit gutted. I thought, that's our Saturday.
We are so into sport that, like, come June when the season finishes, we have like a month of Saturdays and Sundays where we just don't know what to do with each other. We're all sort of going sat around twiddling our thumbs, because like what's really is the rugby they play is like, I think the difference between rugby and football is there's so much more of a community with the rugby. So like you end up watching games at the club, and then people start having like parties, and you just end up spending the whole weekend at the rugby club. So it's like the kids will play in the morning, then you're there watching the rugby in the afternoon, and then it'll be someone's birthday and you're there drinking till midnight. So it's like, you know, we spend more time at that rugby club than we do with our own house at the weekend. But I wouldn't change it. I wouldn't change it for the world. I absolutely love it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great, isn't it? You soon find, like you said before, you soon find your rhythm and your routine. So you've got kids approaching teenagers. Like we said before, our kids are opposite end of the scale, 2, 3, and 4. My son's just started school. How does parenting like change through the years and as they go through those different stages? Like, is there stark differences? Are there different things that you worry about?
Oh yeah, there's definitely different worries. Like I said before, I think there's a tendency to not make the most of the time when they're young. So I think for us, it was quite a unique situation when we had three at the same age. So things were very intensive. We look at them now and you just, but I'm sure everyone's similar. Like I'd give, because a lot of my friends now, because I had them quite young. I was only 25 when we had them. So a lot of my friends now are at that stage where similar age to yourself, they've got young kids and, you know, they're stressed and it's killing, you know, and we'll meet up. It's like we went last week, we went for a walk, because I was like, oh, I can't, you know, if we're going to meet up, like, you know what it's like with your mates, it's rare that you get time to meet up with them. And we were finding that any time we met up, it was always to go out drinking. And then the next day is a write off as well. And it's like, it's hard enough to get one day out away from the family. If you're going to use that day to get absolutely tanked up, that the next day you're a write off, it doesn't go down well. So we sort of went for a little walk around the Lake District. We sort of had, we got up in the morning, went there, had a nice, and it's the same sort of thing. You're still having a nice catch up and it's funny. So my mates are very much sort of like stressed and worried. And I just always say to them like that, honestly, make the most of this time now where they're this young and they're this innocent and they're this sort of like, you know, wonderful and not that they're not now, but it just sort of I'd sound really bad, like I'm dreading them turning sick. But they are different and they go through different stages and you appreciate different things about them. So like now I love their sense of humor. Like they're really, really good company. It's just they're on teeter on the edge of I don't think they think I'm good company anymore. You know. But it was, you know, the pandemic really brought things into perspective for me as well. So with my job, I was traveling, you know, I was away 3-4 nights a week, potentially, doing manic, you know, mad hours on the road. And that was just the way it was. And you know, it was, that was the part of the job that I was doing. And, you know, it was providing everything at home. But then when the pandemic hit and then all of a sudden I was at home for pretty much a year and I couldn't do that traveling, just really changed the perspective of making the most of the time you've got with the kids. And there's this tendency, we sort of live in this world where we're under so much pressure to, you know, got to work and you've got to keep your job. And, you know, the way things are, we've all got these phones and our work emails are on the phone. And we can very quickly get lost in constantly having to work because we think by working, we're being a good parent because we're providing. But then we don't make the most of the time that we have. And I think this is a massive culture thing.
Huge.
So yeah. I talk about this with teaching. And one of the biggest gripes I have is that like everything gets pushed on to teachers to sort, when really there should be workplace conversations that if you're a working parent, you should have that flexibility of, you know, being able to go and pick your kids up from school once, twice a week. You know, it doesn't have to be that kids go into a breakfast club at 6 o'clock in the morning and don't get picked up till 6 o'clock at night. Like that's not doing them at, you know, and I'm not blaming parents for that. It's the whole workplace culture, but no one's having a conversation with that about, you know, how do we change that? It's this idea that you've got to be a good parent and to be a good parent, you've got to work. But by working, you have to sacrifice so much of your time. Mm. Actually, to be a good parent now, we end up spending the least amount of time with our own children. Like it doesn't make sense.
Mad.
You know,
that is absolutely mad.
It is. And it's just, it does have it. Because I think back to when I was, I don't know if it's the same with you, but when we were at school, when we were younger, we there wasn't after school breakfast clubs like there are now.
There's like, a few clubs, but not as many.
I think it was like, yeah, one day a week, clubs. Maybe.
Yeah.
No, and holiday clubs. Just, yeah.
Yeah. There's sort of culture, like my mum and dad both worked, but they worked jobs where it was around school, so they'd be able to drop us off and pick us up.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's like that whole workplace culture shifted so that you're at the beck and call of your boss, and if you're not pulling your weight at work, they'll just replace you with someone who does. So we're at the, you know, the hands of the corporate. It's just, yeah, it just really frustrates me because what we try and do to solve that is we go, right, well, we'll put money into giving breakfast clubs where the schools have got to run the breakfast club. And you're going, schools haven't got the resources. You know, there's got to be other investment and other things happening to support schools, not let's put more on the schools and more expectation on what schools need to do to help the children, you know? But yeah, so going back to the original question, the thing with the kids is it's just making the most of the time you've got, because before long, they're grown up and, you know, you hope you've done your best by them. And, you know, most parents do, absolutely. But you're always doubting yourself, aren't you? You're always questioning. I think that's the big thing now is like we live in a world where you have this constant parent guilt of, are you doing enough or are you doing your best? And, you know, things like so.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Social media doesn't always help with that, does it? Because social media just constantly throws in your face how wonderful and amazing everyone else is at parenting.
Yeah.
You know, it does.
Absolutely.
Like, I talk about this all the time in my training. One of my favorite phrases in life, and I say this to the kids all the time, and I say it to my students, is like, comparison is a thief of joy. And if you spend your time comparing yourself to anyone else, you're always going to be unhappy. Social media just exacerbates that, because we all lie. Like, we all lie. And even though we all lie, and what I mean by lying is, like, we choose what to share about our lives.
Yeah, so you just show the best bits.
Yeah, cherry pick the highlights and we exaggerate them to be better, you know. So you'll go for a meal and it'll be an all right meal, but you'll post like it's been the best meal you've ever eaten in your life. Not. We used to do it. I'd go out with the kids, right? I remember one particular day, this is the one that always sticks with me. We went to this Dino Kingdom, right? The kids were really into the dinosaurs.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was incredible.
It was billed as like this Jurassic World experience, right? So we got duped. I mean, it was a bit like this Willy Wonka experience.
About the same as like the Wonka one.
Yeah, yeah. Before then. And we got there and it was a right ripoff. And it was basically just a park with some plastic dinosaurs in. It didn't even move or anything. It was awful.
Not even one of those inflatable suits.
No, even that would have been better. And it was like the kids were just overtired. They were just really tetchy and arguing. And I became that dad where I was like, right, listen, if you stop crying for 5 seconds so we can get a nice picture in front of this dinosaur, I'll go and get you an ice cream. And then we finally got this picture of us all in front of this T-Rex. And then it was like straight onto Instagram. Great day out with the family. Hashtag family first. And it wasn't. It was a bag of crap. I hated every minute of that day. I remember sitting down with my wife that night being like, why am I doing this? Like, why? What am I trying to impress? But that's what we all do. And the worrying thing is, the serious point with that is, even though we all do it and we know everyone else does it, we all compare ourselves to what we see, and it affects us negatively. It affects our self-belief, our self-worth, our self-esteem. You know, and what I normally talk about then with teachers is like, imagine kids doing that when they know nothing of the world. Man. Like, we should know better. But, you know, so social media is great for a lot of reasons, but there's also things we've got to be aware. You just don't compare yourself, because I guarantee if there's... I've been listening to a podcast, like this famous YouTuber, I don't know if you've heard about this famous American YouTuber who was like this parenting guru and all this, and she would post pictures of videos of her children. And then she's just been arrested because she's supposed to be arrested for like abusing the kids. I think you're telling me about this.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like, you just take everything you see online with a pinch of salt, because the reality is that, because people often ask me like, oh, how'd you do it? And honestly, I don't get the balance right. There are times where I'm probably spending too much time work-wise than I should be. You know, there are days where the kids are an absolute nightmare. But, you know, you don't see anyone on social media being like, oh, check out my kid who's being an absolute nightmare. You know, it's always the best bits, isn't it? So
I found myself just like withdrawing a lot from like social media. Like, I don't go on it anywhere near as much. And I think it's around that point of not just the comparison of just, it's the doom scrolling and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And it was like when my daughter started recognizing that I was on my phone a lot, I was like, okay, maybe it's time to put it down.
Yeah.
I think one thing you were saying earlier, which like for me as a parent, not a teacher, I have no idea about the school system. The idea of my daughter going to school and being put into that, like, we're just going to have to find wraparound care support. Like, that whole thing, like, terrifies me from the sense of you're right. It shouldn't be like this. There should be a lot more room for parents to actually be parents. Mm-hmm. But the solution seems like so far away of like raising everyone's pay and sorting out. It seems like there's no other way around it. So me and my wife both have like extra time off, like condense our hours so we can have more time with my daughter. That doesn't really work when she goes to school. And it's like, now we're talking about the conversations of, can we like do homeschool one day a week just to have more input? But even that's like, financially, that's a huge hit. Mm. And so it's like, I think a lot of people just don't know what the solution is. Like, there, it doesn't seem like there is a solution. And so they just keep going. So not to get too political, but like, as somebody, you probably think about this a lot. What would be some of your thoughts about, like, actually what could be done to actually support both parents and teachers?
Yeah, you're right. And it is, and basically what the government and the media have done, I'd say, over the past decade is pit us against each other, parents and teachers. Yeah.
Oh,
like,
absolutely.
I think the divide and the disconnect is bigger now than it's ever been. And that social contract of valuing schools and valuing teachers and valuing education and the education system is sort of broken. You know, the statistics about the persistent absence of children, I think it's 1 in 5 now, are off, you know, consistently off school. I think there's more parents now homeschooling children than ever before. So but this hasn't happened overnight. This has been a slow sort of deconstruct of the education system from, you know, probably when I was at school, and how, like we said there wasn't really those after school clubs. Well, they started to be brought in. So it was then this idea that actually parents, you can work longer because you can leave your kids at school. And basically it's never really been, and that's especially over the past 14 years, real investment into the future of children. I think we can look at it now, and as a generation, we are the first adult generation that are choosing to make things worse for the next generation. Not all of us, but generally speaking, we are. Mm. Like, previous generations before us didn't realize what they were doing. Yet we know. we've seen evidence that, you know, show with things like climate change and this, that, and the other. And we're still just sort of going, oh, well, you know, you can bring in the Brexit vote and, you know, the statistic I found the other day was, if you did the Brexit vote now, the younger generation who are old enough to vote and the older generation who have had voted out and since died, the 48% would completely flip. So like, that whole vote was done mainly by older people to, you know, the freedom of movement my kids won't be able to get compared to what I had to do. You know, it's all that sort of stuff. It's really, like I say, it's quite bleak and gloomy. But you've got to just hope we can turn things around. I think the biggest thing is investment. It needs to be massive investment in, obviously, schools, but other things outside of school. Like, when I first started teaching, you had Sure Start Centres. I don't know if you're ever aware of these. So Sure Start Centres were created by the Labour government. And now in our local area, we had at one point about 32. And these Sure Start Centres were created to support parents in getting kids to be school ready. So there would be parenting classes. There would be classes about how to help toilet train your kids, wean them off dummies, how to get them reading, you know, just all these sort of things. Because, you know, that's what parents, they want to do the best by the children, but some parents don't know how to. And these Sure Start Centres were set up with family support workers to help those parents. And, you know, when the Tories came in and they brought in the austerity measures, they were the first thing to go. So when the triplets were born in 2011 and my wife went on maternity leave, my wife at that point was a social worker. So she was quite involved with a lot of these Sure Start Centres. And when she went on maternity leave, there was 32 in my local area. By the time she came back off maternity leave, there was 3 in the whole area. Now, that was 2011. We are now at a point, 2024, where 1 in every 4 children starting school aren't potty trained. Mm. And then Pete, it was on the radio this week, like, why has this happened? And it's like, well, it's not an overnight thing. If you're not going to invest and put the support in place to help parents, then this is the this is the consequence. And we live in such short memories as a society that we don't realize, you know, this has not been this has been happening over the past decade. And we're now seeing the real consequences of all those austerity measures from 10 years ago. It's now that you're seeing it, the true impacts of it. So I'm hoping that if, you know, we get a different government in who might be able to move us back towards that older model where the investment was there. You know, I think back to when I first started teaching and, you know, the investment that was going into to all sorts, which just isn't there now. And you've got a situation where teachers are expected to do more with less. And it's just, it's hard because you want to do the best by your kids, but you're working in a system that's set up that makes that almost impossible, you know? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, one thing I'd love to see is more parents aware of the struggles of what's going on in education. Because I think a lot of parents sort of look at it either through that lens of the media where, oh, teachers get all the time off, they probably earn more money than you, and this, that, and the other. And so there's that disconnect and that separation and that. But, you know, if they were to realise that teachers are just wanting the same thing as you, they want the best for the children. And so much of the issues parents will have towards, well, they might air it towards teachers, but the issues a lot of parents have, most of it's out of the control of the teachers, yeah. You know? So if you take sort of the SEND crisis within education, so children with special educational needs, you know, it is an absolute nightmare to try and get a child assessed and diagnosed with a particular SEND need. Because again, the money's not there. So you might have one education psychologist in an area of, I don't know, 50, 70 schools. And obviously the need is higher now than it's ever been before. So the process of getting, you know, when teachers want to be doing the best, but there'll be children there having to support that, you know, won't be able to access the curriculum in a mainstream school, but there's nowhere else for these children to go.
Mm.
And there's only so much you can do within a mainstream setting. And I know that frustrates a lot of parents, and it would frustrate me if I was in that position. So I completely get it, but that's not the teacher's, individual teacher's fault, because they're trying the best in a broken system. It's just the system's just not set up for, you know, it's like just in the last couple of days, the Tories have all of a sudden turned around and they said, oh, we're going to invest a few hundred million in getting more SEND places. Well, where have you been for the past 14 years? Why is it that now, because, oh, I don't know, is there an election coming up? You're now making these announcements that, you know, you're trying to provide solutions for issues you've created. And that's what they're doing now. They're all of a sudden finding solutions for things they have made and they've done, you know. So
yeah
it is frustrating, because, you know, I just feel like kids just get a you know, I always have a go at people who say to me things like, you know, kids nowadays, they just don't know they're born. And I'm like, oh no, I'm not having that, because I'll tell you this now, compared to what my childhood was like, kids have got it so much harder nowadays,
honestly. Yeah.
Oh mate, it's just like, I feel sorry for them. Like, I really, really do. My life was so much easier. You know, my childhood was so much easier.
You go home and you can switch off. You can't call it. You actually have to call someone on the landline.
Yeah, yeah.
Now that whole social environment just follows you everywhere.
Oh yeah.
That must be like crippling. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
The social media side of things. I mean, people often ask me, you know, what advice would I give parents around social media? And it's simple. The longer you can keep your kids off social media, the better. Like,
yeah.
Because most of us as adults, we struggle with it. We struggle with, yeah, like I just said before, the comparison of it. You know, obviously education, because the thing with social media is I don't want to be negative about it, because obviously I've benefited massively off, you know, it's certainly helped my career, and it's helped, you know, I've been lucky, fortunate to get so many opportunities from using social media. So there is so many positives, but I think with the negative side of things, and there are a lot of negatives, but the best form of prevention with a lot of those negatives is education. So I've talked for years about how the curriculum needs adapting to teach children more about social media, not in the fact of letting them use it, but educating them so when they are old enough, they know how to do it responsibly and safely, you know? Yeah. And ultimately, absolutely, whether they've got a device or not, most kids have got a social media digital footprint through their mum and dad's accounts, you know? So it's getting them to understand and learn about how it works. But, you know, the main issues I have with social media is the fact that majority of people who use social media just don't really understand how it works and are therefore very susceptible to the negative sides. Like I find sometimes it's hard to come away from it. And I think because so much of my business is dependent on social media, I suppose, that I find that hard to switch off. But I don't feel I struggle with the other negative sides of the comparison thing, and because I understand what social media is. And yeah. Social media is a platform trying to keep you on social media as long as possible. And so once you understand that everything you do on social media and everything you interact with and everything you watch becomes part of the AI algorithm to keep you on that platform, you can actually turn it into something quite productive. So yes. For example, like I, since New Year, I've lost nearly 2 stone. Right.
Oh, fair play.
And thank you. And obviously the social media's helped with that. So if you know that everything you put into like TikTok, so if you go, so people often they say the same thing with like the training I do, and they go, how do you find the time to find all these ideas? I'm like, TikTok. Because if I want some new ideas to use in class as a teacher, I go into TikTok and I type that in, useful tech tools as a teacher or useful websites as a teacher. If I want to, like my For You page on TikTok at the minute is a bit of teaching stuff, quite a lot of United stuff, and then loads of low calorie, high protein recipe ideas, because I'm on a bit of a health kick. And so that's what I want my, I want it to be, you know, that way, productive basically. And yeah. So what I keep telling people is you've got to be in control of your social media algorithm and not let the algorithm control you. Yeah. So my best sort of parenting tip for any parent who, you know, if you've not been able to keep your kids off social media and they are on there, like mine. So I've recently given in, like I'm a bit of a hypocrite here by saying keep them off. But my kids are on there. But what I've done is I've time limited it so they get like an hour a day on social media. They're not allowed to take the phones in the bedroom. So at the end of the day, they bring me their phones and I charge it in my room. So they don't have it in the bedroom. But then when they bring me their phones, I say to them every so often that I'm going to look at what they're watching. Like I'll go to their watch history and I'll have a look at what you've been watching, because I've got to make sure you're staying safe and you're not watching anything inappropriate. But when I do that, what I then do is I go into their like their TikTok and I'll hack their AI algorithms. So I'll start putting data into their TikTok of stuff that I want them watching.
Yeah, that's
so
great.
It'll be like that's football quality. Skill videos, rugby skill tutorial videos, you know, what fun history facts for a 13-year-old, whatever they're studying in school, I hammer it into TikTok. So they've been doing Romeo and Juliet. So that's, I've just been putting that in, analyzing Romeo and Juliet, year 8 Romeo and Juliet, this sort of stuff. So then TikTok just goes, right, if this is what's going to keep them on the platform, let's send them loads of that content. So then when they go on social media, all they're seeing is that stuff I've inputted, you know? So it's actually quite, then if they're going to spend an hour on it, it might as well be quite useful, you know?
That's so quality. And I think, like you just touched on, the big thing is most people don't even like know about that. And it's like, when you talk about like specifically TikTok in China, the government do that for everyone. They already curate like the algorithms for everyone to be productive.
Yeah.
Whereas us in the West, we're just like, whatever.
And
like,
oh man,
when I first joined it, I was like, I have to be really careful and like actually like properly curate what comes on my page.
Oh, absolutely.
Because
what TikTok or what social media, all of them do it is they don't just use the data of what you're doing on the platform. It's people similar to you. And so every so often they'll throw you a video just to see, because people similar to you are liking it, you might like this as well. I'll tell you the one where I realized it. I got shown a video, it was a while ago now, and it was when Jake Paul was fighting Tommy Fury. And just a video about it came on my For You page, and I just watched it. And then the next time I went on TikTok, I saw another one, and another one. And before long, I was so invested in this fight about two people I don't really care about that I had to watch it. I had to watch this fight. And then I realized, well, they've been duped there. The algorithms controlled me into you know, getting into a topic that actually I'm not really that bothered about. And that was the point where I was like, right, I've got to be more on it with this. So when I get shown something that I'm not interested in, I tell it I'm not interested in it. And it's like things that, and it's also realizing you're not going to get the balanced view of anything on social media. You get a very skewed view based on what you think and what your opinion is. But I think that that is the level of education that we need to be bringing in. So the next generation, when they are old enough to use social media, can make better choices with it, because it can actually be a really useful tool once you know how to make the most out of it, I suppose.
Yeah. Let's play the game.
But that, that lack of education just, it's not there. And, you know, in schools, we don't do enough about it. And I talk about all the time on my training, you know, we get the kids to sit these SATs tests where they've got to learn what a fronted adverbial is and all that sort of stuff. And I'm like, no, no, that's nowhere near as important as whether children can navigate the internet, you know, a platform they're going to be connected to for most of them multiple hours a day, whether we like to admit it or not. Surely we should be educating them about how to do that effectively and positively and, you know, navigate it in the right way. So that's 100%. Yeah, yeah, the curriculum, you know, there's loads of things I'd change about the curriculum, by the way, but that'd be one of them. Is
that's it's huge, because technology is like not going anywhere. It's if anything, it's getting more intense, and that's
And it only will do.
That's something I think about. Like, I don't want my daughter to be like inept at it. Like, I want her to be able to use it properly and like really well. But it's also in that it's teaching her how to actually handle all the dangers and all that sort of stuff.
Oh yeah,
when,
yeah.
When we had a laptop in my house, my parents didn't really know what the internet was.
Like, oh, no.
But now we've got so much information. It's that's like extra weight for parents really trying to get our heads around this of how do we like set them up properly.
My thing is,
go on, Lee, sorry. No, you go.
Because my thing recently is I gave our son a tablet for the first time this weekend. And he's four. And in my head, I'm thinking, am I like, is everyone getting a head start on him? When it comes to like IT classes or I don't know, jobs in the future, am I holding him back by trying to protect him from that screen time sort of thing? I know it's very trivial and he's only four. But in my head, I'm thinking, where do I draw the line between that education piece and that protecting them?
So I suppose it's all dependent on what they're doing with the device. So the thing that I sort of talk to teachers a lot about is, you know, the two ways in which you can use a device is you can either be a consumer or you can be a creator. And a lot of, you know, if we talk about parents using device, most of them will use the tablet as almost like a digital pacifier. So it's like, well, the one that I, and I know this is going to be controversial, but the one that I find really tough is when you go to a restaurant and you see just kids on devices at when they're eating a meal. I'm like, I've never done it. Because I just think meal times are a time to, it's a social thing, meal times. And, you know, if I'm going to take my kids to a meal, I want to engage with them and converse with them and talk to them. So we've never done it. But it's like, well, how are you using that device? So if you're just on that device consuming and you're just watching YouTube and you just watch it or you're just playing games, well, that's not really going to, you know, impact positively. There's a time and place for that. But too much of that can be a bad thing. Whereas if you're using the tablet for children to create, so they're going on there and they're having to go at coding, they're learning how to code. They're not just playing video games, they're designing their own video games. They're not just watching videos, they're creating their own videos. They're the sort of things that start to, that can impact and transform and actually be used in a positive way. So I suppose it's all about how you choose to use the device, really. And it's sort of not, you know, we can all be consumers. Everyone that we all are, like people listening to this, that's what they're doing, they're consuming. And that can be useful. Hopefully people will take a couple of nice things away from this conversation. But we've got to find the balance and obviously give children the education about how to create with the technology as well.
Yeah, that's amazing. Are there any, are there any apps that you would recommend sort of off the dome? That you would recommend to parents
for creating,
for kids to, you know, make stuff on iPads and tablets.
So things like Scratch Junior is a great little way of getting into the coding and the programming side of things. There's other sort of coding apps and sort of games you can play with that. Scratch Junior is a good starting point. Things like Book Creator is great. allows you to create your own little e-books, and you can add pictures and record your voice. And, you know, so getting the children to make a little e-book recounting a holiday where they could be taking pictures and putting that together and recounting it and stuff like that. And then obviously the video, like the one thing I love about the iPad is the multimedia content creation. So, you know, iMovie can be a great way for children to create their own little videos about things. And within that, they're having to talk and they're having to, you know, engage that oracy, which I think is so, so crucial and important. So, yeah, those sort of tools. And I share loads on my social as well, like the more creative side of things. But yeah, Scratch Junior Book Creator iMovie would be good places to start.
Brilliant. That's awesome. I've enjoyed this so much, Lee. Thank you so much for coming onto the podcast. Where can where can people find you? Where can people follow you?
Yeah, I'm on most of the I think I'm on all of them in one shape or form. So if it's just ICT underscore Mr. P on Instagram and TikTok, ICT Mr. P on Facebook, the podcast, Two Mr. P's in a Podcast. You can get that on all the platforms. It's just me and my brother sharing funny story. It's not educational, so it's not like, you know, you're gonna necessarily learn anything. Well, I say that you do as a byproduct of learning what not to do from the stories you share, you know.
Oh, amazing. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Mr. P.
Yeah, cheers, mate.
Well, John, I feel like I've learned something today.
Yep, absolutely.
Thank you so much for listening, listeners and watchers. If you haven't already, follow us on all the social media platforms. And why don't you hit a little like on the video?
Yeah, if you're watching on YouTube, throw a like on the video. And don't be afraid to. I mean, don't forget to. Or don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to get in touch with us at Parenting Tools Pod. We will be back next week for another episode. Don't be afraid to listen. We'll see you soon.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.